This is Geek Gab with your host, Thornall, and me, Daddy Warpig. We are back, Geek Gab, for Monday, April 8th, 2024. It is still 2024, right?
Hey, it sure is. And we are grateful to be here today. We survived the apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. People were actually, like, legit. And I didn't see the original post. I just saw people complaining about it because it's Twitter. You never see people actually saying crazy things. You just see all the people complaining about people saying crazy things. At least I do. In my corner of Twitter. But, yeah, people were saying it's like the apocalypse or something.
I don't know. There was just an eclipse that cut through North America. I think the southeastern U.S. got most of it. And there's a bunch in the Midwest, too.
Little Rock got some. We have a friend in Little Rock. I wonder if he stepped out and saw it. Friend of the show, Kursova. I wonder if he got to see the eclipse.
Well, I hope so. I hope he got some of it.
Well, am I supposed to say that on the air? Oh, that's bad. I might have just doxed him.
No. I'm pretty sure if you follow his Twitter, you know he's in Little Rock.
Oh, I feel terrible. I just realized I have absolutely awful OPSEC. The other day I realized that. But I heard it was like going to be the zombie apocalypse or something. I'm terribly disappointed. I haven't heard it's not the zombie apocalypse. I just assumed that if it was, I would have heard that by now. Is it not the zombie apocalypse? Reassure me.
It is not. Oh, well, you know what? I've spent most of the day at home. I've been working. I've spent all day at home. If it were the zombie apocalypse, I wouldn't know.
I just assumed we wouldn't be that lucky. That if it would not be that lucky that it would be the zombie apocalypse and the end of civilization. That civilization would just continue to go on. So. You still have to pay your bills, folks. It's still tax season in 7 days.
Dang it.
People wanted it to be the end of the world.
Yeah. People were just tired of all the rat race and the nonsense. I can understand that. But nope. It just so happened that the sun was blocked by the moon for a few minutes. But I saw a few cool pictures that people took of it. It's kind of a unique thing. Way up here in the Pacific Northwest, it wasn't a big deal. We just had we had some shadow for a little while. And of course, it was too cloudy for me to see anything.
I saw pictures from all over the country, and every single one I saw had clouds. Nobody could see anything. Elon Musk was live streaming the eclipse from wherever he was at, and he had heavy cloud cover. I'm like, wow, this is the most exciting eclipse I've ever seen. Look at all that. The sky was the color of television tuned to a dead channel. It was the most cyberpunk eclipse ever.
That is a brilliant line, by the way.
Yes.
That's William Gibson from Neuromancer.
For those of you that didn't know. Anything else happened besides the eclipse? Not the end of the world and the eclipse?
Not the end of the world. I missed it, but wrestling fans just enjoyed some WrestleMania. Yesterday and the day before, I was thinking about watching it, but apparently they turned it into a two-night thing, which made me not want to watch only one night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We just at the same time. Can you believe we've been doing this for years? Something like 9 years now, and we still say all the time.
Well, if I didn't want to say we'd end this, and that'd be a big old pain in the rear.
Imagine if we did regular YouTube videos where our heads and hands chop, like we go on camera and our heads and hands chop back and forth, like we were Max Headroom because of cutting out all the ums and the awkward pauses. Oh, wouldn't that be terrible?
I've seen people do that, trying to edit this. In fact, that was the very first thing we did when we were just planning on doing this. We did a test, a 10-minute test, and I actually edited it together. And that just convinced me to do this live. I was not going to do that every single show.
Life is too short.
We talked for 10 minutes about the new Dresden Files novel that was coming out at that point 10 years ago, which I believe we were talking about a ghost story at that point. Mm-hmm. If memory serves, and it usually does. And I was just like, nope, I'm not doing that. I absolutely refuse to edit this anymore. That's why we do this live, is because I have absolutely no patience to sit here and edit this. If I was making a lot of money off of this, we could afford an editor, fine. That would be great. But I'm not doing this for that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. To get really high quality, professional grade YouTube videos, you have to hire professionals. It's like having your own miniature production company. And that's not us. Unless some angel investor drops by Patreon and decides to give us enough money to hire a professional editing crew.
Yeah.
Well, I say all our couple hundred or so listeners, if there's someone among you that wants the Geek Gab to do a professional show every week, just do that. We need some startup capital. That was a joke. We are not asking for money. Well, we're not asking for that much.
I'm just imagining what that would be like. We could have a studio like those, like the epic rap guys of history have a studio with green screens and makeup ladies and people to do the hair, and we could have those circle things that I see all the trendy influencers have. They put their phones in front of for their lights that give them the little rings of lights in their eyes.
Oh, yeah. Man. If only.
Speaking of influencers, the funniest thing in the world happened yesterday. Have you ever heard of Johnny Somali?
No.
He's this TikToker who wandered around in Japan, obnoxiously annoying Japanese people until he got arrested and then kicked from the country. He got banned from Japan. which you have to be so completely obnoxious for the Japanese to say, get out of our country and don't ever, ever, ever come back. And everybody was happy because he is a naturalized American citizen, but he's originally from Somalia, but he calls himself Johnny Somali because, you know, apparently being American isn't good enough. And he goes around being really obnoxious, representing the country poorly in foreign countries. So yesterday he was in Israel and was doing his shtick on TikTok, which is being obnoxious on camera. And he was picking on an Israeli Defense Force woman, calling her I didn't watch the whole clip because I have a low tolerance for this sort of thing, but he was calling her and you'll have to pardon my language, folks. I don't usually use language like this, written or spoken. He was calling her a bad bitch on camera. And so two Israeli policemen arrested him And as soon as they arrested him, he started screaming, "I'm American! I'm American! I'm American!"
And how'd that work out for him?
Apparently, they only held him for 16 minutes and then let him go. But still, it was so satisfying to see one of these obnoxious TikTokers get arrested and hauled away. Oh, because the advent of social media has given people the idea that they can be really entertaining because they have an audience. And a lot of people have decided to be entertaining in really disruptive by being assholes. Let's just. And it's always nice to see those kinds of people get their comeuppance.
You bet.
It's satisfying. And I would like to see him get his comeuppance by getting thrown in some Israeli prison for like 5 years for verbal abuse of an authority figure. But 60 minutes of detention would also do. Because they had to haul him away bodily. They had two policemen on either side of him, lifting him up as he's trying to get away. You always wonder what it would take for reality to smack people like that in the face for them to say, huh, maybe I should be a decent person again. But somehow it seems like people like that always become, or it seems like enough people like that become millionaires to spawn tens of thousands of imitators who themselves don't become millionaires, but spread out in society and become pests. And you just want to punch him in the face is really what you want to do.
Yeah, there's no shortage of people who monkey see, monkey do. And as soon as they catch wind of someone making a lot of money off of being a bad monkey, they go all in on it.
And unless people think this is a racial thing, there's this little white kid who's this little scrawny kid who walks around walking up being obnoxious to people trying to pick fights, and then he has this massive bodyguard as soon as somebody gets annoyed and responds to him who just steps in, and he does all of this on camera, of course. So I'm not saying this is a racial thing, because there are plenty of obnoxious TikTokers of all races and sexes. But yeah, it is obnoxious and endemic. And I wish I was going someplace with that. I just thought it was funny. It amused me. It made me happy. It fulfilled some need I had in my soul to see this guy wandering around Japan actually receiving a little bit of payback. And if I thought he would learn a lesson from this. But they only let him go after 60 minutes, so he's not going to learn a lesson from this, because he's going to count the amount of money he got for that brief amount of discomfort and think, oh, it was worth it.
Absolutely. No such thing as bad press. Just spell my name right. The internet is
myself depressed. I was excited at the beginning of that. Now I made myself depressed. I talked myself into feeling sad about that. Dang it. I'm trying to remember if there was any other news this week.
I don't think so.
No. The automatons in Helldiver 2 have been eradicated, and the the Tyranids, that are not called Tyranids, they're called Terminids, are fought to a standstill. So the long rumored, my guess is the long rumored third faction is about to make an appearance. Those of you who don't play Helldivers 2, and I don't because it's not on the Xbox.
There's a long rumored. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Helldivers 2? You've never heard of Helldivers 2?
I've heard the name. I've heard that it's a video game, and that's, I don't know anything else about it.
It's a massively multiplayer sort of squad-based shooter where you're in a squad, you drop to a planet, you carry out missions, and the sum total of all the people playing the video game, their efforts go into an overall strategic overview, and so everybody playing the game can combine their efforts to achieve certain things.
That sounds amazing.
So the community playing the game has defeated the automatons and has fought the Terminids to a standstill. So my guess is there is a long rumored third faction coming out. Of course, this is in public pre-release right now, public preview, while they're still working on adding new features, new types of weapons and balancing things and stuff. So I'm guessing at some point, once the game is ready to go, they're going to, you know, do a server wipe and restart. But yeah, you know, congratulations to Helldiver 2 players. It's a PC and PS5 exclusive only. So, but it's fascinating to watch. It's a great model, and I'm sure Microsoft or other studios are planning on jumping right on it with copycats, but being first mover, they have the advantage. But congratulations to all the Helldiver players out there for defeating the automaton menace.
Oh, that's cool. Just the idea that it's an online shared world, and what people do sort of affects everybody else who plays the game.
Yeah.
It's good to see. It's not like World of Warcraft where everything's sort of, it's massively multiplayer, but the raids are instanced.
No. You get, because it's not a, it is not a coherent world. You can't wander from your mission into somebody else's mission. You just
got it.
You have a raid that you jump into. You have a squad of four people. You do your raid, and then your mission's over. And their mission's like, okay, land here, destroy this facility. Or land here, kill this number of Terminids. Or land here, invade this hive, kill this, you know, boss, Terminid, whatever. And that achieves a goal, and achieving that goal advances the commands, strategic objectives on one planet. And based on how everyone on that planet's doing, that planet might be liberated, or that planet might fall to the enemy as they advance. And then there are planets all across a sector. And then there is a galactic map with how well the war is going across the whole galaxy. So there are several sectors across the galaxy. And you can track how the war is going on a strategic map of the galaxy.
That's cool. And so when you're playing the game, you're not so much, it's not so much you are in the same exact world as everybody else or the same exact instance, but everybody's scoring points against the same goals.
Right. That's, I shouldn't have said MMO, because it's not an MMO. I don't know exactly what the term is, but you know, you're not all wandering around the same world where you could meet other players and stuff. It's kind of like it's kind of like a Counter-Strike match, only the you're not playing PvP, it's PvE. And whether or not you win the Counter-Strike match scores points for everybody else who's also playing Counter-Strike against that same enemy across a whole galaxy.
Got it. That's cool. It's definitely a neat idea for a game.
Yeah,
I may have to pick it up now.
Colorful enough that they have a lot of color in it with the government. You know, they call it Super Earth. There's a bunch of propaganda.
Starship Trooper style, yeah.
Yeah. And so they've added a bunch of stuff to it to make it interesting for the players. Players have really gotten into, you know, role-playing. It's almost like Paranoia, the role-playing game, the tabletop role-playing game. There's tons of memes about it. Players make videos on it. And so there's a lot of investment in the game just because it's a fun world to be in, but the game is also fun to play. So if the game wasn't fun to play, it wouldn't be so meme-worthy. But the game is fun to play, and it's meme-worthy. So they've made it worthwhile to invest in emotionally. And people really care about advancing the war front, and it's great to see.
That's a win. That's a huge win for the developers.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they can, players by choosing which planet to accept missions on, have actually organized campaigns to take back specific planets. Like there's a planet called Malevolon Creek that they lost to the automatons, but, a bunch of them got together, and I think we talked about this last week. A bunch of them got together and started doing missions on that and managed to take it back from the automatons. And then everybody focused all their efforts on the automaton front and defeated the automatons while still holding the Terminids to a standstill so they weren't able to advance. But there was a player organized effort to focus their on a goal that they had. All the players of the game organized to attack a specific planet, and they invested in it and they took back that planet. So that is a unique dynamic that I think that is really valuable as far as a game design perspective goes. And they do have someone who's over the game that they call a game master. But at the same time, as a game master, as the game master for Helldivers 2, you want to recognize that, yes, it needs to be challenging for the players, but building a game in which there's a framework that your player base, the entire player base of the game, some plurality of them, some large faction of them, 33% of them, can organize to specifically take back a planet. That's a really valuable dynamic that you want in your game. And whether they meant that to happen, or whether that just unexpectedly came out of the mechanics that they had built, it doesn't matter. That is something that you want to keep. That's something you want to preserve going forward. Mm-hmm. And it is valuable and it is fascinating to see. And of course, it ought to remind you of discussions you and I have had before about other things. For players to be able to organize, have goals, set goals, accomplish goals, and succeed in those goals, singularly in across a large group. I mean, there was the, for the BroSR, there was the Blood Rain phenomenon, where we had people at various different campaigns were working together to try and stop a goddess, and were winning victory points against that particular. And this was what, 2 years ago?
Yes.
And so
it's on top of, whatever joy you get out of playing a first-person shooter game, where that you develop skills and you learn all the maps and how to play and everything. It's more than that. It's on top of that. You get that sort of player-driven initiative to, set their own goals and execute on them.
Yeah, and we had something similar in the BroSR, because of one-to-one time, because of coordination between the campaigns, because it allowed us to have people move from one campaign to another, to have Stormbringer move from one campaign to another, and then to have the sword thrown at the sun, and then to have that play out on a strategic basis during Grovenloft, and then to have the consequences of that affect all the BroSR campaigns. We could have everybody in different campaigns working towards the same goal. So to have that in a video game is a very valuable dynamic. It's a very interesting dynamic, and it's great to see those sort of things come out. And I hope that Helldivers maintains that going forward, and be interesting to see if other games now try and foster that sort of player agency, where it's not just here's a dungeon, here's a raid, and a lot of people can go through the raid or go through the raid again, but it's the game designer setting up the goal for you. But game designer setting up, okay, here's a menu of possible options for you, and allowing the player base to choose which goal they go for. And not just making it reactive, also having, okay, well, the enemy is now taking action, so you have to decide how to react to that, because a completely reactive enemy is boring too. But still, it's great to see a degree of player agency coming to video games, where in the interests of story, it has always been completely reactive. So I like that. It's interesting.
It reminds me of basic stuff that we did back in the heyday of collectible card games. Legend of the Five Rings was the most famous, where depending on how the players performed in tournaments, what sorts of clans and characters they played in their individual decks, players would then influence the direction of new card sets that they would print. Same sort of thing.
That's interesting.
If a character wins a certain number of is instrumental in winning several tournaments, they would create an advanced version of that character for the game. He'd get a new card with different abilities or better abilities or whatever, and the players would do that. That was a big part of the culture in Legend of the Five Rings competitive play.
I literally know nothing about that. That's fascinating. I'll have to look that up. I'd like to learn more about that. You were saying that you had run into a new game this week.
Yeah, I had a game night, tried out a game from 2023 new board game or new-ish board game called Apiary. It's from Stonemaier Games, a worker placement game. And your workers are, as you may have intuited, they're bees, but it's a weird space exploration themed game. So they're supposed to be evolved, super intelligent space bees exploring the galaxy. The theme's way cooler than it sounds, but I found it to be an interesting and engaging game, typical of the Stonemaier games. They are the ones who produced Scythe and Viticulture, and there's a few others that they've come out with at this point. And they're all sort of medium complexity games that are, you know, the mechanics are really well put together and they match the theme fairly well. And that is not their calling card. Their calling card is that they match the theme just enough to work. That is to say, they're not strongly correlated with the theme. They're crunchy enough to you can get a dozen playthroughs and really sort of explore all the different strategies. So they've got good replayability and they're genuinely fun to play. I thought Apiary was pretty good. I would like to play it a few more times. And honestly, if I like it, I didn't like it enough to snap order it for myself. But if I like it after the second play, I'll get it for sure. I don't know what else to tell you, DW, without going into excruciating, boring detail on the actual game mechanics.
All right. I really have no questions because I am, for the most part, a card board game neophyte.
We'll have to solve that.
I tend to find a few games I like and stick with those.
Well, I tell you what, the best thing that you can do is if you want to learn more, there's now a dozen different ways to play online. BoardGameArena.com is still there. There's a French site that I'm blanking on and I wouldn't be able to pronounce it anyway. There's another one, Tabletopia. And those are all web-based things. And plus you can play all sorts of games on stuff like Tabletop Simulator. Or find some local board game groups in your local area at your friendly local game store or anything like that. And, you know, not just for you, D-dubs, and anybody. People like playing these games and you can find them.
There was a, and I don't live in Salt Lake anymore, but there was a, at one point, a game store in Salt Lake City that would regularly have open game nights where you could come in and game and learn new games, game with people, because it was really helpful introducing people to new games because very often they'd buy them. So,
if you're thinking of the same one I am, it was actually called Game Night.
Oh, that was the name of the store?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. and you had mentioned also that, speaking of changing the subject, you'd mentioned you'd finally seen Monarch.
Yeah, finished Monarch. It's kind of like I said before, sure wish that there were, well, no, it's like you said, I sure wish there were more monsters in it. Yeah. And also that most of the human characters weren't there. But it was, it was fun. You get some monsters every episode and they wrapped up the story and revealed all the secrets within, what, 8 episodes or something like that. I'm not surprised we haven't seen any more Monarch, but it was cool. Sort of a fun disposable TV series.
And you did not need to see any of it to understand the new Godzilla and King Kong movie.
That's right.
Unlike what they tried to do with the, you know, Multiverse of Madness or whatever with the Marvel movies, you don't need to see anything in Monarch to understand the movies it's supposedly connected to. Which is fun. I'm not complaining. And it has Kurt Russell in it, and he makes the show way better than it deserves to be.
Yes, absolutely. He was actually a lot of fun.
And Kurt Russell's son still does a good job.
That was a cool stunt casting. Like, who plays young Kurt Russell? Just get his son. Done.
Yeah. So what I did today was I watched 2 Raquel Welch movies in a row.
Nice.
Movies I've never seen before. And I'll be perfectly honest, one of them I've owned for a while, and one of them I just bought over the weekend because it was on sale for $5. And I thought, oh yeah, I've kind of sort of had an interest in maybe seeing that at one point. It's on sale for $5, so I'll buy that. And then I thought, boy, I need to do something for the show today. I might as well watch this. And then I thought, I need to do something else for the show today. Oh, I've seen one Raquel Welch movie. Why don't I go ahead and watch this other one?
What
and that'll
could go
sort
wrong?
Of be a theme. So I watched a movie called Hanny Calder, and I've watched another movie called Fantastic Voyage. And I'm assuming everyone's heard of Fantastic Voyage. And Fantastic Voyage is, I believe, and I just want to say it's not the song by Coolio.
That's what I thought we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Disappointing, I know. Fantastic Voyage, the movie, is not based on a novel by Isaac Asimov. It's based on a short story. They made the movie based on a short story by Otto Clement. And Isaac Asimov was tapped to write a novelization of the movie. So I read the novelization when I was little, but I've never seen the movie until today. And from what I remember of the novelization, which again, I haven't read since I was probably 9 or 10, it's a pretty straightforward adaptation of the movie. And you will know the movie if you watch it, because they literally have done this movie so many times in so many other media that when you watch this movie, you will have seen it again and again and again. They adapted this movie for an episode of Futurama, where they take the Planet Express ship and miniaturize it and stick it into Fry's body. Oh, this movie's about a man who gets hurt, and he's got a clock that they can't operate on, and so they miniaturize a submarine with people inside and inject it into his body. to travel inside the body, to where this clot is, to operate on it, to save his life, because he has critical information on defense technology. It's set in the Cold War, because that's when the movie was made, and they're going to save his life. That's it. They have an hour to save his life before they re-imbigulate, and they have to get out of his body by then. So if you've seen that episode of Futurama, they took the basic concept from this movie, and they've done it again and again. If you've seen the movie Inner Space with Dennis Quaid, they took the basic concept from this movie. None of the plot points, but, you know, small sub inside the body going through, you know, blood vessels with red blood cells going to various parts of the body that are huge and the guy's small. So it is a fun movie. It's got Donald Pleasance in it. It's got some other character actors from the time you might recognize. Honestly, the people I recognized I couldn't name, other than Raquel Welch, who is absurdly gorgeous, just one of the most beautiful women in the world, and always has been, just absolutely incredible. And it's a real adventure, and I quite liked it. Even having the ending of the book spoiled for me, ending of the movie spoiled for me by the book, it was great. And you have to realize that when you watch it, it is, it was made with special effects of the time, and so you can't, you can't expect modern day special effects. It was released in 1966. But even so, for the time, it was, it looks great. I mean, you can point to it and say, oh yeah, I know what they were doing here, I know what they were doing there and stuff, but I thought they did a great job. And it's enjoyable. So it's fun.
A classic, often copied, often referenced film for good reason, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why it has a fascinating science fictional concept, and people keep on going back to this movie for a good reason, because the idea is immortal. You get shrunk down and put inside the human body. Oh, yeah. Rick and Morty had an episode that...
Oh, yeah. Family Guy did it, too.
Simpsons had a shrinking episode. They didn't go inside the human body. They had a shrinking episode. I'm sure a ton of other... What is it? Inside Out, the whole movie was based on emotions traveling through the body. That whole movie was based pretty much on this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a reason why it keeps on getting referenced. If you haven't seen it, then I can definitely recommend it. It's a lot of fun. So I don't know what else to say about that. It delivers exactly what you would expect. Special effects, tension, thrill ride. There is a suspected saboteur on board. There's some questions about that. There are obstacles thrown in the way, both from the body and from other events. One of the great things about this movie is it harkens back to a time when Hollywood cast beautiful women in its movies instead of the not as beautiful women that they seem obsessed with casting now. And I don't want to say that Hollywood casts ugly women in its movies now, because that isn't quite true. But the women that it's casting now are definitely not as beautiful as the women it used to cast. I mean, when you go back and look at the women it used to cast in movies in this, you know, golden age of Hollywood, and then 60s, 70s, 80s, even up into the 90s, they were world-class beauties. They were legendary beauties. Grace Kelly, Raquel Welch, Bo Derek, you know, all throughout the 70s. I mean, these were absolutely world-shaking beauties. And the women now, even if they're good-looking, are just not on the same scale of beauty. And I'm not calling them mid, and I'm not calling them ugly, but they are not the same level of world-class beauties. They're just not, with a few exceptions. But yeah, it is sad to see that
oh no. See, it's really sad to hear Daddy Warpig not be able to finish his thoughts because he went on mute or his microphone died or something. I'll say, in case you're listening, and for everybody who is listening, you're absolutely right. I don't know what is going on in Hollywood. I could hazard a few guesses, and I don't think they'd be politically correct. But it's crazy. Just think about, we just watched Dune a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that stands out, it's glaring just how ill-suited Zendaya is to Hollywood. You know, this is a woman who is, I think she got her start as a model, right? She's she's a great clothes model and everything. But she's not pretty like Raquel Welch, right? She doesn't have the face. And on top of that, she isn't a very good actress, which is too bad. Like I said before, nothing personal. It just, it is what it is. When you watch the films, you can't deny it. There's just something strange about that. Well, I didn't see the movie, so I'm not sure what I'm going to vamp about. You know, it is really strange, and I think it's not just an all of a sudden thing. I think it's been a process. It seems to me that Hollywood in particular has been going on a downslide in terms of the quality of performers. We've talked a number of times about someone like Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is perhaps the last Hollywood star. He's one of the only A-listers left, and you know, he gets movies made. He puts people in the seats. You know, he's handsome, incredibly charismatic, and he's a great actor, right? So you've got Tom Cruise, and there are many other good movie stars, but that group, right, that elite group of, you know, the most handsome or the most beautiful or the, you know, the most charismatic who are gonna take over, right? They chew scenery and take over a whole film. It seems like we don't have a large group of them, and we get fewer and fewer of them every year. I think that has a lot to do with the cost of filming and the cost of technicians and special effects, and the fact that studios don't have to deal with that kind of talent anymore. They don't have to deal with you know, some prima donna starlet when they can spend a whole bunch of money on whiz bang computer generated Godzilla suplexing King Kong and sell that movie overseas to people who don't care if the actors don't speak their language, and, you know, recoup all their costs. It's a business after all. And I get the impression that hiring beautiful people to look good in a film is no longer useful to the business. Welcome back, Daddy Warpig. How's that technical difficulty?
Yeah, we had a breaker pop at the house.
Oh, dear.
So I had to reset the breaker and reconnect to the internet. So that was fun. Anyway, Hanny Calder is almost the exact opposite of Fantastic Voyage. It is in Fantastic Voyage, Raquel Welch plays a supporting role. In Hanny Calder, she is the main character, and it is a revenge Western. She plays a woman, the wife of a rancher, and he is murdered, and she is assaulted by three desperados, and so she goes out on a mission of revenge to hunt down these three brothers. She learns to shoot and goes out to get her revenge, and the rest of the movie is her finding her vengeance. The beginning of the movie feels a bit choppy and rushed. I think maybe some things were cut out of it. I would say it's a solid B-minus movie. I'm a big fan of revenge movies as a genre. Peppermint, you know, the original Death Wish movies. I just like the genre. This is a decent entry. It's not a great entry, but it's a decent entry. I'm curious about it. Hanny Calder, I mean, because I've seen it. So I'm glad I got a chance to sate my curiosity. It was worth watching once. It was worth spending, you know, $5 on sale to buy the movie and watch it. And it was enjoyable. It's got Robert Culp in it. It's got Christopher Lee in it in a supporting role. He does an excellent turn. It's got some really excellent gunfights in it. And yeah, It's got Ernest Borgnine in it.
Man, the 70s I enjoyed were awesome.
Or at least I enjoyed it. And she does a credible job as an actress.
Raquel Welch. Oh no. Do we lose power again? This is the Geekab technical difficulties of technical difficulties.
Am I not here?
You, your audio dropped out again for a minute. I was about to call you up and tell you to stop running the microwave and the vacuum cleaner at the same time.
Oh, I was like, it's like, wait, oh, I swear.
You just went mute again. So it was an okay revenge flick, but it had all these amazing stars from the 70s in it.
Yes.
Or sounds good to me. Or is it older than that? Is it 60s?
I did not say what
you say revenge flick like Death Wish, and I think of the 70s. That sounds like that era.
But yeah, it was 1971.
Yeah. Okay.
I spent about just over 3 hours watching the two movies today, and it was a good way to spend an afternoon.
Cool.
I don't know what else to say. I had a time. They were both excellent movies. Or at least they were both enjoyable movies. I don't want to oversell. Fantastic Voyage was better.
Sounds good. And I had no idea. It's amazing that I did not know the name of the film that all those other shows had parodied by recreating the trip inside the human body. That was cool. You know, I was this old when I learned. Oh, that's great. I'm glad it's, you know, that's the nice thing it's one of the nice, always been one of the nice things about the internet, being able to stream these classics without having to track down a physical piece of media or something like that. It's great that we're able to watch these classics. I still have to finish. I was on a Kurosawa kick for a minute, and I was watching Rashomon, and I still have to finish that one. Classic samurai era film. And you don't have to track down copies, you can just find it. Of course, it might be wise to make physical backups, but what are you going to do? Well, Daddy Warpig, I think we better not tempt fate and wrap it up for the night.
Yeah, sorry, I'm suddenly out of things to say.
Every time you stop to think, I worried that we've lost you again. And as we discussed at the top of the show, we're not going to go back and cut those that dead air out. So I hope you enjoyed it.
Was that really long dead air when the power cut off here?
Oh yeah, it was a few seconds. It wasn't huge. I suddenly realized that since I had not seen the films, I had to come up with something different to talk about. But it all worked out.
They called that vamping.
You know what? I'm still not used to that. But I think we're done. It was great to talk to you about all this stuff. I hope everybody listening was entertained, if not by the discussion, then by the technical difficulties. And I hope everybody listening later goes and checks out. If you're a game player, check out Apiary. It's cool. And don't forget to, when you're browsing the your streaming services or wherever you get your movies and stuff, don't forget there's old good stuff too. You don't have to watch the whatever's top 10 on Netflix this week. Go watch an old Raquel Welch film.
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking of seeing if there's anything else of hers that's worth watching that I haven't seen. She has that famous poster that showed up in The Shawshank Redemption from 1 million years BC, the caveman poster. But unfortunately, I can't find that on streaming, so I'd have to buy it on DVD or Blu-ray or something.
That's a shame.
All right. Well, oh, I think it's time to go.
Take us away.
All right, folks. We want to thank everyone who tuned in and listened, participated in the chat. And we want to thank everyone who will listen later. This has been Geek Gab for Monday, April 8, 2024. If you've been a long-time listener, please hit us up joining our Patreon or Subscribestar. We're here on youtube.com/geekgab just about every week, just about the same time. We're also available on we're also available on soundcloud.com, on the Google Play Store, and on itunes.com. Just do a search for GeekGab. Subscribe to us on the device of your choice. Download us to the computer or just listen to us on the web. We are signing out for today. Don't you fret. We will be back.